This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
In this economy, how big do you suppose is big enough? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 9th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So while the Wednesday morning quarterbacking, I guess it's Wednesday late afternoon quarterbacking by now, right? Of yesterday's elections continues, we are going to stay in our lane trying to make sense of where this economy might be going. And we're going to do that today with a letter that Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Meta, nay Facebook, of course, sent to the 87,000 people who work for him today. 11,000 jobs is the bottom line. They're going, about 13% of the company. Zuck said he had guessed wrong, that the big growth boom Meta saw in the pandemic was going to continue. Obviously, it hasn't, thus Zuckerberg being wrong. And a whole slew of other tech companies that have laid people off of late have also said that they have grown too fast. And that, in turn, honestly made me think of an interview I did about 6 or 8 years ago with Ed Bastian, who was then the brand new CEO of Delta Airlines, and a question I asked him about whether he thought he just had to keep on growing the company.
I think any business that's not growing is in slow motion liquidation.
Any business that's not growing, he said, is in slow motion liquidation. So in a country and in an economy where growth is the be all and end all, can you grow in a way that doesn't eventually lead to cutting back? Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes gets us going.
When a company starts out, it generally knows what it's selling and who will buy it. This is what people in the business world call product market fit.
But as you grow, that product market fit starts getting diluted.
Sunil Gupta is at Harvard Business School.
Because you get different set of customers, marginal customers who are not right in the bullseye.
Gupta points to Starbucks, which opened a lot of stores really quickly in the 90s.
There were jokes going around that time that the new Starbucks opened in the bathroom of the old Starbucks. By doing that, you're just serving very different kind of customers. And you had some customers who want to lounge around and sit down, and there's some customers who wanted to be in a hurry.
And that's with coffee. When you're a fast-growing tech firm, it can be hard to find the right talent and enough people to make the new product for the new customers. Anant Lechner is at NYU's Stern School of Business.
Companies have struggled with all of this. They struggled with identifying, you know, what part of the opportunity pie shall they go after. They struggled with finding the right talent for that. They struggled with onboarding people.
And Lechner says there's pressure from shareholders to do all this quickly.
That FOMO, right, the fear of missing out, propelled a lot of that type decision.
But shrinking after growing fast isn't all bad. Some of those 11,000 people laid off from Meta might become entrepreneurs in their own right, says Sarah Kunst with the venture capital fund Clio Capital.
because you have thousands and thousands of people who were perfectly happy inside of their well-paying, high-skilled tech jobs who now all of a sudden, you know, are faced with a pretty big array of choices, right?
Like, do they start a chain of coffee shops or a fast-growing tech company of their own? I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
$15,994 at this very moment is what it had cost you to buy one Bitcoin. It's worth a mention here that crypto trades 24/7. So by the time you decide to make a trade, after consulting your own financial advisor, of course, well, Bitcoin could be higher or it could be lower. You go ahead and roll the dice. Anyway, I mention that because crypto is kind of having a moment and it is not a good one. The giant crypto exchange Binance has said no thanks all the same to bailing out its closest rival, a company called FTX. Marketplace's Lily Jamali explains what's going on.
The crypto exchange FTX counts Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen as investors and Larry David as a spokesman. The CEO and founder of FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, is a celebrity in his own right, in crypto circles anyway, a crypto bro with a likable image, a goody-two-shoes even, in the eyes of some Washington regulators, says Laura Shin, author of the book The Cryptopians.
Sam really was seen as somebody who was trying to bring more regulation to crypto than most crypto people are even comfortable with.
This spring, as the current crypto winter set in, Bankman-Fried went on a crypto buying spree as weaker companies started to buckle. But when FTX hit a liquidity crunch of its own, it ran into a good old-fashioned run, with users pulling out money and crypto all at once. And Duke University's Lee Reiners says unlike previous crashes, the one in 2008, for example, this time
there's no lender of last resort to step in and stop the hemorrhaging, right? The Federal Reserve is not going to provide emergency liquidity to these crypto firms.
Reiner says there was really just one institution, larger rival Binance, with the balance sheet capacity to bail FTX out. But Binance made clear today it won't be doing so. It cited a due diligence check and reports that FTX mishandled customer funds. Moffitt Nathanson's Lisa Ellis says letting FTX fail could now make hedge funds and other investors think twice.
If they literally lose everything, they might internally establish policies that disallow participation in some of these unregulated exchanges,
leaving Binance and perhaps the entire crypto sector in a vulnerable position. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Fortune favors the brave indeed. Wall Street today kind of looks like traders didn't care much for the way the election turned out, huh? Or, you know, maybe it was something else entirely, right? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Tucked in here every year between Halloween and Thanksgiving comes the season of open enrollments. Whether you get health insurance through work or whether you buy an Affordable Care Act plan on the marketplace, this is the time to sign up. Premiums are going up about 4% on average this year for marketplace plans, though there are big variations by state, as there always are. For the most part, though, that's actually not going to matter to most people, how much premiums go up, that is, because there are significant subsidies that bring the actual cost of insurance way down, again, for the coming year, thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
Shopping for health insurance isn't exactly most people's idea of a good time.
It's a daunting process to have to go on to the marketplace and enter all of your information all over again and look at all the plans.
But Cynthia Cox at the Kaiser Family Foundation says it's worth your while, especially if you're buying on the exchanges.
A lot of people automatically re-enroll into the same plan they were in the previous year, and what you bought last year may no longer be the lowest cost in your area.
Health insurance premiums for ACA plans are going up in many places for 2023, after being flat or going down the last couple of years. Sabrina Corlett at Georgetown Center on Health Insurance Reforms says there are a couple of reasons for that. For one,
inflation is starting to be felt in health insurance premiums, just like inflation is being felt everywhere else.
People are also going to the doctor again after largely staying away in the early days of the pandemic. And Corlett says insurers expect that to continue.
but the vast majority of people are not going to feel the sting of those premium increases.
Because Congress has extended funding for higher health insurance subsidies that began during the pandemic through 2025 as part of the Inflation Reduction Act. And she says that's made ACA insurance much more affordable than it used to be.
Many people will be able to find a plan for $10 a month or less.
And as subsidies have gone up in the last couple of years during the pandemic,
we've seen a substantial increase in marketplace enrollment.
Matthew Fiedler is with the USC Brookings Schaefer Initiative for Health Policy.
During open enrollment last year, 14.5 million people selected plans on the marketplaces, and that's up from a little over 11 million people in 2020.
For 2023, open enrollment in most states runs through January 15th. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
The new-ish Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Rishi Sunak, told the UN climate conference happening in Egypt this week that he wants to make the UK a green energy superpower, which is great. But the challenge, of course, is that the UK has been politically volatile, shall we say, the past 5 or 6 years, 4 prime ministers in that span. And given the budget maneuverings of the last government, there are some economic vulnerabilities, too. How come? Well, 6 little letters, B-R-E-X-I-T. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is on that story.
In the basement of his home in Kent, business consultant Peter Cook has been waging war. A musical war against Brexit. Since the vote to leave the European Union 6 years ago, Cook has been articulating his rage against that decision in song.
How many of these have you composed?
Oh, about 60 tracks. I'm quite busy.
But he doesn't believe he's been wasting his breath. He thinks his campaign to reverse the referendum will bear fruit, especially after the fiscal fiasco of the mini-budget.
Britain will rejoin the bloc eventually. It's almost inevitable because Brexit has consumed 4 prime ministers so far, and it's consuming our economy.
Brexit, he says, has knocked international confidence in the UK.
People laugh at us a lot now. Actually, many of them pity us, saying, what have you done? And why?
Departure from the bloc, he says, also caused deep divisions in the ruling Conservative Party, leading ultimately to the mini-budget debacle that almost crashed the economy. He blames Brexit for a lot of the UK's economic ills.
Our lack of resilience due to Brexit is the underlying factor. We're no longer able to absorb shocks. That is the problem.
UK trade with the EU has suffered. According to one recent study, it's now much lower than it would have been had the UK stayed in the bloc. Darren Price runs a small clothing firm exporting to and importing from continental Europe.
Any business that operates trading across Europe has increased costs and therefore decreased profitability, and it makes it harder to operate.
Price hated Brexit, but he doesn't believe that after all the trauma of leaving, the UK will rejoin the bloc. However, he says it should and probably will rejoin a part of it, the EU's regulatory system, the single market.
I do think that a closer relationship with Europe is absolutely vital.
Ardent Brexiteers, of course, take the opposite view. I met a couple of them here in this storage depot, toiling away on a key Brexit-related project.
A lot of work, as you can hear.
They were unloading a consignment of books, posters, flyers and other exhibits for the planned Museum of Brexit.
What we hope to do is ensure that there's a memory, an institutional, academic memory, of why it happened.
It happened, says Gawain Toler, who campaigned for Brexit for decades because the British people decided they wanted to be a fully independent nation again. He's ticked off about the recent upsurge of complaints from Remainers.
They are ramping up a rather monotonous drone. Brexit will never succeed. Brexit will always fail.
And Brexit is to blame.
Brexit is to blame for everything, all our problems.
The pandemic and the invasion of Ukraine are the main source of Britain's current problems, he says. And anyway, it's hardly an international basket case. UK inflation is lower than in the Eurozone. Interest rates are higher in the US. UK government debt GDP is the second lowest in the G7. Anyhow, nobody expected instant nirvana.
Brexit was never going to cure all our ills overnight. Of course it wasn't. And you'd have been nuts to think it was.
One issue on which many Remainers and Brexiteers agree, the British government has been a shambles over recent months, and this time the politicians have had nowhere to hide. After Brexit, they can hardly blame Brussels for the turmoil. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up.
And it was unbelievably emotionally difficult to go through. It was so stressful. I didn't think it would ever end.
Identity theft is no joke, gang. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 646 today, almost 2%, 32,513. The NASDAQ subtracted 263 points, 2.5%, 10,353. The S&P 500 down 79, about 0.2%. 37 and 48. Those 11,000 layoffs at Meta that we talked about right before Stephanie Hughes' story, they pushed shares higher. Facebook's parent picked up 5.2%. Big tech rivals that did not announce layoffs today didn't fare so well. Apple gave up 3.3%. Google parent Alphabet slipped 1.75%. We talked about Bitcoin, right? That's down 15% as of right now, lowest in 2 years. $1.5 billion, that's how much Walt Disney says it lost in the last quarter on its streaming services. As it tries to take on Netflix, shares in the mouse descended more than 13%. Day, you're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. In the spirit of the way that I started the program yesterday, which is to say, yes, there's an election, but the economy still keeps going. Tomorrow is going to bring us our next read on inflation in this economy. The October Consumer Price Index is what I'm talking about. And even as I say that, it occurs to me that I ought to point out that the CPI is actually a lagging indicator. It tells us where inflation has been, not necessarily where it's going. But anyway, prices are up almost everywhere. Groceries, gas, clothes. Also, hay. Agriculture is not immune from increased costs, you know. And even though hay providers are charging more than ever before, that does not mean they are getting rich. Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan has more on that.
Tom Johnston is a hay producer in western Wyoming. He sells his hay to horse owners across the country and has been doing this since the 1980s. He's currently out in his hay yard on a crisp fall morning.
I just got to pull this tarp off. I got a buyer coming up from Green River.
That's a nearby town. Johnston rolls back the tarp on the towering haystack. It reveals deep green square hay bales that smell sweet and earthy.
Yeah, this is nice hay.
He starts up the tractor to load the hay for the customers. This year, Johnston is charging $325 per ton. He says it's the most he's ever charged. Typically, a horse will eat about 2 tons of hay over a winter. And this year, average hay prices in the Rocky Mountain region have skyrocketed.
Probably $250 a ton and up.
That's Brett Moline. He's with the Wyoming Farm Bureau Federation. Moline says just 2 years ago, the price of hay was about $150 per ton in the region. Moline says prices are up because the cost to produce hay this year was so high.
The price of oil drives so many things. You know, fuel prices were substantially higher than they were a year ago, but probably the biggest item is fertilizer costs.
Hay producers need fertilizer like phosphorus and nitrogen to make the crop in bulk. And this year, the prices are about double from what they were last year. Johnson says higher fertilizer costs for him mean higher costs of hay for customers.
And, you know, I feel for my people because a lot of my customers are 20-year customers. You know, but at the same time, you know, we don't do it for fun. We like what we do, but we can't just... We're a pretty tight little operation. We don't have room to lose a bunch of money.
Johnson predicts the high prices won't be sustainable.
Oh, hay prices are going to crash pretty hard in another year or so. I would say next year they'll be down quite a bit.
He says he thinks people will start selling their horses, so demand will go down. And that's actually the case for Spring Moore. She's a working cowgirl in western Wyoming.
So this winter, I've kind of cut down on my number of horses, mainly just because of the cost of feeding them through the winter.
Moore sold off 2 horses so far, leaving her with 5 now. It's the first time she's had to do that because of hay prices. And she says that means having fewer horses for rodeoing and cowboying. But if you're going to have even 1 horse in Wyoming, Moore says hay is a necessity.
Especially around here, because, I mean, some places down south, they can feed grass, you know, all year long. But around here, we don't have that option. When the snow gets 3 or 4 foot deep, we have to feed the hay.
Having horses is a way of life for Moore. But if prices keep increasing, she says she won't be able to maintain her herd size. In Pinedale, Wyoming, I'm Caitlin Tan for Marketplace.
There was an article in the Los Angeles Times the other day that was all at once horrifying and a really good object lesson in looking out for your personal information, and completely frustrating, too. It was about identity theft and fraud, about which the Federal Trade Commission says it got 2.8 million complaints last year, with consumer losses topping $5.5 billion. Jessica Roy is a reporter on the utility journalism team at the Los Angeles Times. She is also the author and the subject of the article in question. Jessica, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I suppose this is one where we kind of have to start at the beginning. You're at a bar in San Francisco, and then what happens?
I went to pay at the end of the night, and I reached into my purse, and my wallet was gone.
So you, being a conscientious person, call the police, I imagine, in the next couple of days. You report your license gone, all the rest of it. And then what happens?
Right. Yeah. I canceled my debit cards and got them replaced, got a new license, bought a new wallet. And I kind of thought that was the end of it. And a month and a half later, in January 2019, I started getting these huge envelopes in the mail with all this paperwork that were like, congratulations on your new Bank of America checking and savings account. Here's your Wells Fargo checking and savings account, following up on your application for a Target credit card. And I use a credit monitoring service. And I got these emails that were like, new inquiry. Is this new card yours?
So what did you do? I mean, when you've clearly had your identity stolen, which I imagine by this point in this story you have realized, what did you do?
I sprung into action right away. I went online and I froze my credit with all 3 credit bureaus. I filed an FTC complaint on identitytheft.gov. I went to the FBI's online criminal complaint center and filed an IC3 complaint. And I followed up with the San Francisco police to get the report about the stolen wallet so that I had all of my paperwork in one place.
Did it do you any good?
I yes and no. I would find myself in the position many times over the following months and years where I had to mount a Supreme Court case in my own defense. And so having all of this paperwork mm-hmm. together helped, but it didn't stop them from what they had already done. They'd already gotten checkbooks and used my driver's license to do a bunch of things, like they stole a Tesla. They were in a car crash in a BMW that time and presented my driver's license. They wrote a check for someone's bail and that person never showed up. And so a debt collector was reaching out to me quite frequently about that one.
I should say here, let's just take a brief sponsorship break and say you should read this story if you haven't, because it is amazingly just, and I'm quoting you here, Jessica, Kafkaesque. It's just unbelievable. The thing that gets me is that it was you against the system, and the system didn't care.
No, not at all. I really felt in this experience like I was victimized twice, like more victimized and many more times over by the banks, the credit bureaus, all these people, all these institutions that had accepted checks from them. And it was unbelievably emotionally difficult to go through. It was so stressful. I didn't think it would ever end. I had no idea how I would get out from under it.
All right. So let's do a little utility journalism here, a little service journalism. If you could say one thing to the people listening to this and who will have read your story about identity theft and solutions and things people can do, what would it be?
Proactively freeze your credit. It's free and it only took about 15 minutes. I was pretty shocked at how easy it was. And then when I was applying later on for a mortgage and a car loan, very easy to temporarily unfreeze and then refreeze it again.
We should say here that in that moment that you unfroze it, something else happened to you.
Yes. When we started applying for mortgages in summer of 2020, I was very upfront with our lender. I said, you know, I'm a victim of identity theft. There's going to be some weird stuff on my credit reports that I'm still trying to untangle. And you guys need to let me know the last possible second that I can unfreeze my credit and then you can check it. And then call me back and I will refreeze it. And even in the 24 hours that I had to have it unfrozen, I got a text alert from one of my banks that was like, congratulations on your new checking account. Click here to view how the process is going or something. And I called them in tears. I said, what can I do to stop this? And the customer service rep went, well, if we could stop all instances of fraud, we would, but we can't. It's like, oh, okay. Well, if it would be hard for you, I hate to trouble you with my little tale of woe.
Jessica Roy, let me just say again, actually, read this story. It is unbelievable and cautionary at great expense to Jessica Roy, I will say. Jessica Roy is a reporter at the Utility Journalism Desk at the Los Angeles Times. Jessica, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me.
This final note on the way out today. Do you remember all the hullabaloo as some of the big tech companies started breaking the $1 trillion mark in market capitalization? Apple and Amazon, Microsoft too, I think, Google and Tesla, right? Well, you live by market cap, you suffer by market cap. Saw this in Bloomberg today that Amazon is now the first company to lose $1 trillion in value. A bit more than a year ago, the math of outstanding shares times share price got AMZN to a market cap of $1.88 trillion. At the close today, a mere $879 billion. Okay, gone is what we are, but here's your moment of economic context. It's a coda of sorts to Matt Levin's amazing story yesterday about Zoom and AMC teaming up to let companies do Zoom meetings in theaters. Well, Zoom also said this week it's got a deal with Tesla to integrate Zoom into that car's software. The question here on this desk is the same as we asked yesterday. Why? 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 Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Dorado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.